Menthol Cherry Red, a Homestuck fan fiction by Jumping Jack Flash. Read by Mothlights. Chapter 1. When you wake up in the middle of the afternoon, it's just a tickle in your throat, a vague sense of unease. Your breakfast tastes weird, but you just assume the milk is going off. You brush your fangs and take a shower and try to wake the hell up. An hour later, you're a wreck. Your head is splitting open. You can't seem to get warm. You put on a sweater. You put on a sweater over the sweater. You stare at the work you did yesterday and can't make heads or tails of it. You may not be apeshit bananas at computers like a certain duotone douche, but you don't suck anymore. You're good enough to make a living so you don't have to mooch off your roommate. You're good enough to write this code on your screen, so why the fuck can't you read it? Your nose whistles when you breathe. You sniff hard, feel snot hit the back of your throat, and it flips a switch from itchy tickle to racking cough that nearly knocks you out of your chair. By the time it finally lets you go, you're sweaty and shaking. Gripping the edge of your desk so hard your claws leave dents, you stare into the yawning depths of horror. You played and fought and grieved and triumphed for this? A sweep, a couple of years of peace in a joint universe with all your friends. A universe where your empty quadrants aren't a death sentence and your mutant blood is a mere annoyance. Where the closest thing to strife you have to face is a cereal fight with John over the kitchen table. And then death, by respiratory infection, in the comfort of your own apartment. When you think of it like that, it's not so bad. Carcinogeneticist, CG, began trolling ectobiologist, EB. CG, the inevitable has occurred. CG, submicroorganism endemic to this speculatively overcrowded planet has mutated sufficiently to colonize my defenseless bloodstream. CG, mimicking precisely the scenario from the human literary classic War of the Worlds. CG, except that instead of saving the humans from destruction at the gruesome appendages of mindless genocidal monsters, this heroic microbe has saved your pathetic ass from my compact... CG, comparatively mild wrath at your complete fucking inability to ever do dishes, ever. CG. So, basically nothing like the book at all, except that I'm diseased. CG. You could have... CG. CG. You could have... my one-piece figures on the condition that Vriska is never to touch them. CG. I don't care how persuasively she argues that all things piratical are somehow her purlieu. If you let her sociopathic grit nubs pollute their pure friendship, I will haunt your ass. CG. And not in a fun jumpsuits and backpacks way, either... CG. Either. CG. We are talking inexplicably persistent stenches, bleeding walls, and CG. Eggbury, this rate, I'll be dead before you... The door of your room opens with an insulting lack of urgency. John lounges in the doorway with his hands in his pockets and watches you cough up your air sacs. "Wow, that sounds like a bad one," he says. And you contemplate whether you still possess the vitality to punch his inappropriately cheerful smile down his throat. "You should go back to bed."
"Fuck that," you gurgle. "I will die at my post like a troll, damn you."
You can't give up yet. You still have to troll Solix and tell him he can have all the rest of your stuff. Carcinogeneticist, CG, began trolling Twin Armageddons, TA. CG,
look,
"Okay, you're done," John says brightly, taking hold of your arm. He loops it around his neck and starts steering you toward your bed. You try to explain how unacceptable his attitude is. The first word sets off a coughing fit so bad your knees buckle. John matter-of-factly scoops you up and carries you the rest of the way. He tucks you in, pulling the covers up to your chin, and turns away. You catch his wrist. Your grip is weak, but he stops and looks back.
"That's it?" you rasp. "No goodbye? No, it was nice knowing you, Carcat. I'll miss you, buddy. Why are you acting happy about this?"
His smile melts slowly into confusion. Confusion into remorse. And remorse into honest to God, punched in the heart, pole-axed pity like no one has ever shown you before.
"Holy shit, Carcat," he breathes. "You actually think you're dying."
Your glare is ruined by the effort it takes not to cough.
"You're not playing it up for humor. You think you're dying for real. And you think I would just laugh it off and walk away? You dick."
He sounds hurt, but his eyes are still pity soft.
"It's just a flu, Carcat. Jeez. And for the record, I was going to get you some medicine and extra blankets." "Oh."
You have no idea what a flu is, and you're not at all convinced it won't kill you, but you should have known he wouldn't just leave you.
"Sorry."
He sighs.
"It's okay. Just quit freaking out. I'll be back in a minute."
Left alone with nothing to do but listen to your sinuses whistle, it feels more like an hour before he returns with his arms full. He juggles a small army of bottles onto the bedside table, then piles blankets on you until you ought to be roasting. You still feel cold. He makes you take chalky little white pills, big, chewy orange pills, and a tiny cupful of deep green syrup that tastes like something you'd mop floors with. He has you wash it all down with big gulps of blue Gatorade, which is palatable only in comparison with the green syrup. The green syrup, you inform him, is obviously made from the bile secretions of horror terrors. "Nobody likes it," John assures you, "but it'll make you feel better." You scowl up at him.
"I notice you aren't saying it'll cure me."
"There's no cure. It just has to run its course." You're about to tell him precisely what you think of his chirpy bullshit, because the words, "there's no cure," should not be said with a smile. But he derails you by bending closer and stroking an icy hand across your forehead and down your cheek.
Egbert, you croak.
What?
You're really hot. I hope WebMD is right about human fever reducers working on trolls.
Oh.
Well, that was almost really awkward. But his hand sure is lingering. He sits up and puts his smile back on. Don't worry. If your temperature doesn't come down soon, I'll do some more research and find something that does work. So, what do you want me to read to you? You blink up at him, dizzy with emotional whiplash. Well, mainly dizzy from an incurable disease that is probably still going to kill you despite his assurances. But realizing that the reason he took so long to fetch the blankets and green death bottle was because he was looking up treatments for you, you don't know what to do with that. It's almost worse than the face touching. Or should I just leave you to sleep? He asks, when the silence stretches too long.
No.
You bite back the rest of it. Don't leave me alone.
On top of...
Coughing cuts off the rest of it, but your gesture leads him to your to-read pile, and he brings back the book with the bookmark in it.
Wow, Wuthering Heights? That's like real literature. I don't think a single bodice gets ripped in the whole thing.
Are you sure you want to hear this one?
Fuck you, you rasp. Read it or don't, I don't care.
John flops down on his stomach beside you, hip to hip and elbow to elbow. Opens the book to your place, props himself up on his crossed arms, and starts reading.
But I don't like the carving knife, Mr. Hindley, I answered. It has been cutting red herrings. I'd rather be shot, if you please.
He looks up at you with a laugh. Maybe your taste in books doesn't suck after all.
A little less.
Pause to cough.
Commentary, John.
Oh, fine, you'd rather be damned, he said, and so you shall. Ugh, I can't even point out the blatant semicolon abuse going on here. You groan.
John.
He giggles, but goes back to reading without further interruption. His voice washes over you like eddies of warm wind. Little by little, the shivers abate. The headache doesn't go away, but it subsides from, my skull is about to burst and release a vast swarm of slightly smaller skulls, each equipped with eye lasers, spider legs, and a throbbing headache of its own, to 3 or 4 angry monkeys with rubber mallets. The urge to cough gets easier to fight. You sink into a stupor, feel unconsciousness sucking at you like a deep black bog. Is this the medicine he gave you? Or is it death? You feel so hazy, so heavy. Maybe this is the final weakness. Would John lie to you? Would he tell you there's hope of recovery to make your final moments less terrifying? Would he be able to joke with you, to read to you with that sweet little smile on his face? He glances over and sees you struggling to keep your eyes open, and his smile turns pitying again. Would he look at you like that if you were truly going to be all right? You're not shivering, he says gently. He puts the back of his fingers against your cheek for a moment. Good. It's working.
I'm so tired,
you say, in a tiny, wiggler voice that doesn't sound like you at all. Should I go so you can sleep? You shake your head slightly.
Keep
You glance at the book.
Okay.
He resumes reading. If you are dying, you know for a damn fact that there are worse ways to go than warm and sedated, lulled by the sound of John's voice. With a great final effort, you work a hand free and grope toward his until you feel him clasp it. Then you let yourself sink into the dark. Chapter 2. You wake up and almost wish you hadn't. All your symptoms are back in force, and they brought reinforcements. Your mouth tastes like robot puke. Your eyeballs are three sizes too big. Your fucking eyelids are throbbing. You're drenched with sweat. Your bones ache. And when you sit up, you double over and cough up something that feels like a half-rotted jellyfish in your mouth, which you have to swallow because there's nowhere to spit. Croaking John's name does not cause him to appear. You have to piss, and you're dying of thirst. Otherwise, you just take a wild guess at the dosages on those medicines he left you and go back to sleep. You bully yourself out of bed and lurch to the bathroom by sheer force of surliness. The apartment is dark. John is probably asleep. Or maybe he went out. The kitchen clock says it's 2 in the morning. He stayed over at Dave's playing games before. Slept on the couch there more than once. Maybe he got tired of your sick sweat and wheezing and absconded. But he was so upset by the implication that he'd walk out on you. No. He's a jerk sometimes, but he's a better friend than that. Asleep, then. You'll have to make an effort to cough quietly. You flop into your computer chair and nudge the mouse to wake up the screen. CG. Look. TA. Interesting. Tell me more. TA. No, seriously. Tell me more. I have no idea what I'm supposed to glean from that. TA. Okay. What the fuck, KK? I am starting to worry, and worry is not a good look on me. T.A. Do I need to come over there? C.G. Hi, Solix. Carcat can't come to the computer right now. T.A. Well, that's not ominous as fuck. C.G. He just has the flu. I made him go to bed. T.A. What the fuck is a flu? CG. Look it up. I just thought I should tell you so you don't come over and get infected. TA. Infected? CG. Okay, gotta go. Carcinogeneticist, CG. Cease trolling twin Armageddons. TA. Look it up. Yes, you should do that. Fuck. You're freezing again. Your hands feel like they weigh a ton, and you keep making ridiculous typos. You can barely read the screen, can't parse what you do read, and as far as you can tell, everything you're finding is aimed at humans. It makes you so frustrated, so angry, that you start crying. And now you can't read at all, which makes it worse, and the next thing you know, you're sobbing too hard to type. The front door rattles. You hear John singing under his breath as he jingles his keys. You try to get yourself under control, but the tears won't stop. And then it's too late to save face. John bursts in, all rosy-cheeked from the cold, smiling, arms full of grocery bags, swaddled in 2 years' worth of roses, knitted gifts. He hears you. Looks through the open door to where you sit, shivering and biting back sobs. Smiles and singing time is abruptly over. He shoves his bags onto the entry table, knocking over a picture frame, and charges into your room like an army. Hiding your face would just look like a cheesy play for pity, so you glare at him instead. It doesn't slow him down. He storms right into your personal space, takes your wet face between his woolly gloves, and bends down to stare blue-eyed concern at you from 4 fucking inches away. "Carcat," he demands.
"I don't know," you snap. "I was just, and then this, and I don't even know."
To your horror, you burst out sobbing afresh. "Oh, man." He's pity-facing at you again, but at least he no longer looks about to kill something.
"Yeah, the flu can do that to you."
He hasn't let go of your face. He's trying to mop your tears with his thumbs. You fully intend to push his hands away, but somehow it just doesn't happen. To tell the truth, what he's doing really kind of calms you down. "Oh, no. He's shooshing you. He has no idea what he's doing. He's not capable of properly meaning it, but it's still working, and you're just not up to fighting it." Half ashamed and half relieved, you let your cheek rest against his hand. His eyes go soft and misty, just as if he were a troll and his pity was romantic. You close your eyes and let him wipe your face.
"You're going to wreck your gloves," you murmur.
"Rose will be glad of an excuse to knit me new ones," he says just as softly. "Come on, let's get you back to bed." You not only let him pick you up, you put your arms around his neck and lean your head on his shoulder. You're shameless.
"I can't sleep anymore," you protest.
"You want to be on the couch instead?"
"Where will you be?"
You feel his chest hitch against you as he catches his breath. He sounds a little strangled as he says,
"Wherever you are, if you want me there."
You nod slightly.
"Couch."
Giving in to selfishness, you wallow in the illusion of pale love as he settles you on the sofa, piling pillows behind you and blankets on top of you. He gives you more medicine, has you pick out a video to watch, moves the coffee table so you can reach the remote. The kitchen and living room are separated only by a wide arch. You watch John instead of the movie. He fills up the kettle, puts away the things he bought. Are those tea boxes? But both of you usually drink coffee. And what are those little bags? Like candy bags, but not quite colorful enough and with too much writing on them. You find out soon enough. He brings one over, opens it, and hands it to you. You read the package with building emotion. Wild cherry flavor. Triple soothing action. Soothes sore throats. Relieves coughs. Cools nasal passages. Oblivious to your dewy eyes, John fishes out a little oblong and unwraps it. "Here, suck it. Don't chew it. Well, I guess nothing bad happens if you crunch it up. It just works better if..."
"You went out for me."
He tilts his head, confused by your distress.
"Yes? At 2 in the morning. The bus isn't running. The quarters door is closed. You walked, what, 3 miles?
Car cat.
In the cold. And you can't see in the dark. And there are assholes abroad at night. And you're not a god anymore, John. It's not safe.
Car cat, it's
just to get me medicine candy,
you conclude in a hoarse shout.
John, tell me the truth. I'm really dying, aren't I? That's why you're being so nice to me.
He rolls his eyes, pops the medicine candy into your mouth, and kisses your forehead. You're not dying, Car Cat. He sighs. He stands up. Do you want tea or broth?
If it's no big deal,
you garble around the candy, which does not taste like cherry very much at all. It lies.
Then why are you acting so...
You can't say nice again, and you know he'll just dismiss it if you accuse him of pale flirting. But he cannot convince you that forehead kiss was a normal human friendship thing. He turns back at the kitchen arch. His face is serious, but there's a scrunch of amusement around his eyes.
Well, you are being awfully pitiable right now.
Before you can recover from that, he holds up a box in one hand and a jar in the other and waggles them as if that's supposed to make them look more enticing. Broth or tea? You are utterly defeated. You're done resisting. If he wants to play Moiraine, then you'll cough up diamonds for him until he comes to his senses or you expire. You're too sick to fight it anymore.
Broth, you croak.
You got it.
And cuddles.
He hesitates, staring. And for a second, you think you misread him. Then a brilliant smile breaks over his face.
Coming right up.
Chapter 3. CG.
I'm not dead yet.
TA. Nice of you to take a moment out of your busy schedule of totally ignoring me to deliver that not even slightly self-evident nugget of information. TA.
I appreciate that so much.
CG.
It's taking longer than I expected.
T.A. What if? C.G.
Dying.
T.A. Okay, tempting as it is to play along and watch you flip your fit, you're obviously not your usual eloquently obnoxious self. T.A. So I'm going to do you a huge favor and act as the voice of reason here. T.A. You're not dying. If Egbert says you are, he's pranking you. CG.
No, he says the same thing. But the way he's acting.
CG.
He's just...
CG.
If I wasn't...
TA. Sit, KK. This is better than those Keith mashes a couple nights ago, but not much. T.A. Maybe you shouldn't be at the computer. C.G.
It's the green syrup. I can't...
C.G.
Words.
C.G.
Very much.
C.G.
I'm on my phone. In bed.
T.A. Well, good. T.A.
Fuck, I shouldn't laugh, but you're a stitch like this.
T.A. Who am I kidding? I should totally laugh.
TA. Okay, Troll Fakespear. Explain to me, in your own disjointed sentence fragments, why you refuse to believe you're not terminal.
CG. Jod is playing pretend boy rail.
CG.
Very convincingly.
TA. That kind of not okay.
CG. No, it's fine. I know it can't be real, but...
CG.
He's good at it.
TA. KK. Humans only have one quadrant.
CG. I know. Shut up.
CG.
You think I don't know that?
CG.
I'm not pale for him either. But... when I'm this weak and helpless.
CG.
He really does pity me. And I know human pity's not romantic, and he knows I know, so...
CG.
Why else would he cuddle me and bring me things and kiss my cheek, except to make my last nights less lonely?
CG.
Even he would do that as a prank.
T.A. K.K., listen to me. This is important information, and I need you to take off the medicinal haze and pay close attention.
T.A.
Humans,
T.A.,
only, T.A., have, T.A., one, T.A., quadrant.
T.A.
You criminally oblivious, romantically retarded wank stain.
C.G. But he...
C.G.
But if...
C.G.
Oh.
C.G.
Oh, wow.
T.A.
Good. Well done!
Picture, if you will, my measured applause.
T.A.
Now would you Google troll influenza already and quit flipping your shit?
T.A.
And hey, while you've got the window open, try looking up how to tell if someone is pale for me in real life, where romantic prospects aren't designated by convenient rains of flower petals and swelly, sappy music like they are in my moronic movies.
T.A.
Asshole. Twin Armageddon's, T.A., has ceased trolling carcinogeneticist. John comes in with the refilled reservoir of the new humidifier and snickers at your face.
Did you read something shocking, or are you just mouth-breathing because your nose is stuffed up? I can't tell.
I think,
you begin, and you trail off. You frown at the phone, no longer sure you understand anything at all. There's a glugging as he fits the reservoir into place. He flicks it on and the comforting hiss of steam resumes. He went out and bought the contraption yesterday while you were sleeping. He's always awake when you are, too. He claims to have been taking naps, but his eyes look bruisey with fatigue. That's a long way to go for faking pale. But for a real human single-quadrant romance? You don't know. You just don't know.
You think? He prompts.
I think Solix is pale for me.
John beams.
It's about time!
It's hard to swallow, and only partly because your throat hurts.
And, he pointed something out to me. You, I thought...
You don't know how to phrase this, and your think sponge is too saturated with mucus and green death to function properly. John sits on the edge of the bed and hands you the glass of orange juice from the bedside table. Yes, he says encouragingly when you give it back.
He reminded me humans only have one quadrant, you force out in a rush,
then glare at him, daring him to even try to bullshit you. He looks surprised, and for a moment you think he's going to play innocent. But what he says is, did you forget?
No, but the way you
grimace, holding back another cough until you can talk without letting it out.
You shooshed me. You calmed me down, and
his surprise is fading into worry with a twist of hurt. I wasn't trying to copy Troll Romance. Oh, shit. Now I feel like a huge jerk.
No,
Wow, Carcat. Way to make everything terrible.
I thought you were kind of trying to so I could die happy.
John throws his hands up with a growl of exasperation and a huge eye roll. He snatches your phone from your unresisting hand, types furiously for a minute, and shoves it back at you. You struggle to focus on the web page he brought up. Influenza in Trolls is the title. You take the phone. You read. You feel like a moron.
It says it's more serious for us,
you say defensively as you toss the phone aside.
More likely to be fatal than in humans.
In very young or old trolls, or if they have a weak immune system, he shouts.
Or if left untreated. Carcat, if people were cars, you'd be a fucking Abrams tank.
You're the unstoppable force and the immovable object rolled into one.
If you were any tougher, you'd be bulletproof.
And I've been taking really good care of you, too. And if you got worse, I'd know the signs. I've done so much research, I'd know if you needed the emergency room. And I put the fastest local cab company in my phone, and I've been carrying taxi money at all times, just in case.
And Jesus fuck, Carcat, do you honestly think I'd let you die?
You gape. John is on the verge of tears. You've never seen him like this. He's really put that much effort into looking out for you? He's really that sure you'll be okay? He's been so affectionate just because he felt like it? Something in your chest swells, unfurls, as if your heart has been cramped in a cocoon all this time, and it's only now emerging.
Oh, shit. You pity the fuck out of him.
And it's okay that it's not pale, because the only quadrant humans have is the red one.
I'm sorry, you say hoarsely. I'm just not used to... You know.
You gesture at the humidifier, as if it can stand in for all the care no one ever gave you. I know, John says. He reaches for your face, slowly, giving you time to stop him. You catch his hand and pull, reel him down by it, half sit up to meet him. Feverish as you are, his lips feel chilly. It's weird and sublime. When you start shaking from holding yourself up, he follows you down to the pillow and keeps kissing you. Little, soft kisses with pauses between so you can breathe, because your nose is stuffed up. It's not dignified, or pretty, or like any kind of movie kiss you've ever seen. But you find you don't mind at all. Eventually, you're too tired even for that. Then you just lie side by side looking at each other, trading giddy, disbelieving grins.
"They really don't taste like cherry, do they?" he says.
"They taste like gasoline, John. And I will forever associate that flavor with you being inexplicably wonderful to me. And I'll probably develop a taste for the damn things. Thanks a lot."
"Well, they are red," he points out.
"Did you do that on purpose? Was it a hint? John, you ass! Did you do that shit on purpose? Stop laughing, you goon!"
But you're laughing too. It makes you cough. And you don't even care.
The end.